Hey, Nikki, let me take your picture real quick.
Erica, it was just one little mistake.
Smile.
Ah, the flash.
Now you're a card in my card collection.
Oh, no.
What do you want your stats to be?
Free, three bloods. No, wait. Free, three damage, three hearts, never die. All the great things.
Unkillable.
Yes. So, Eric, what game are we talking about today?
So, we're talking about Inscription. Oh, yeah. Welcome to Press Any Button. Yeah, I'm Eric.
I'm Nikki.
And we're talking about Inscription.
Inscription is a roguelike deck-building game developed by Daniel Mullins Games and published by Devolver Digital. It was originally released for Windows on October 19th, 2021, and Linux, Mac OS, PlayStation 4 and 5, Switch, Xbox One, and Xbox XS over the next 2 years. The game puts the player in a cabin where a mysterious game master makes them play a tabletop game. More specifically, a card game.
I wonder what the card game is called. It could be anything.
Spoiler warning, there are a lot of different ways we can spoil this game. Part of the game plays like an escape room where there's really just one solution. There are also other surprises in the game, which I already might be saying too much. Just saying that.
Yeah, it's hard to really talk about this game without giving out spoilers.
Yeah. We would recommend, if you are a fan of games like this and you are planning on playing this game, maybe do that before listening to this episode.
Yeah, I think it only costs like $20 or something. It's a really good game.
I think maybe I saw it on sale right now because it's kind of a spooky theme. And I think they had like a scary game sale on Switch. So maybe check that out too.
Yeah.
All right. So Eric, I'm really excited to learn about this game. It's a very unique game. And although we say roguelike, it's kind of like a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things. Yeah. I think. So I'm really excited to hear like where the idea came from and how it got started and all that stuff.
All right. Well, let's talk about it.
I'm putting my squirrel card down. That means I'm ready to start.
Okay, yeah, so the most obvious thing is, yeah, Inscription was developed by Daniel Mullins Games. So Daniel Mullins Games is pretty much Daniel Mullins.
Okay.
Probably the
That seems like it would be obvious, but you never know. You know, there's some like bands out there where it's like, oh, this is one person, but then there's like a whole band with it. So
yeah, you never know. I guess
you
could have
never know.
Sold off his company at some point, and that's it would true. Still be Daniel Mullins Games, even though he wouldn't be part of it. But
I mean, he could have like a bunch of employees too.
Yeah, that's
who
true.
Who knows? I don't know Daniel Mullins.
In this case, he's the kind of the main person behind the company and does most of the game development himself.
Cool.
So,
all right, we've been here before. We've talked about games where pretty much one guy did like the whole thing.
Yeah.
And some of those have been the best games that we've played. So.
Yeah, and to me, this one's pretty up there. So there were two previous games Daniel Mullins Games developed before Inscription, Pony Island in 2016 and The Hex in 2018. Have you or heard of or played either of the games?
No, but they, in my head, they sound very opposite. Like to me, Pony Island is like, oh, look at all these cute ponies. And then the other one sounded like a lot different.
I think that Pony Island is actually kind of a dark puzzle game as well.
I thought it might be that the title was not as dark as like the game might be.
But yeah, I haven't played either of them, but I think they're supposed to be like pretty good.
Do you want to play them now?
Yeah, I do actually. So for Inscription, we're going to start with Ludum Dare in 2018. So are you familiar with the 48-hour film festival where you have like 48 hours to make a film?
Yeah.
So picture that, but with video games.
Oh, cool.
So that's pretty much what Ludum Dare is. So Ludum Dare is a Latin phrase that means to give a game.
Okay, that's cool.
So basically, yeah, developers are given 48 hours to develop a game that fits into a specific theme that they're given like right before.
Okay. So they can't think about it beforehand.
Yeah.
I mean, they could, but like the odds of their idea already matching the theme would probably be slim.
Yeah. So in this case, we have Daniel Mullins participating in Ludum Dare 2018. The specific theme for that particular Ludum Dare was sacrifices must be made.
Okay. Nice.
You're starting to see the connection?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, not only are you sacrificing cards in the game, but you can also sacrifice parts of your body, like your teeth and your eyes.
Mm-hmm. You could sacrifice your group members.
Yeah.
You could sacrifice animals.
Yeah.
That's a thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways you could go with that theme.
Yeah. And this particular event, he did not win this, but he would take that game that he made from that event and put it on his itch.io, which is a website he has that has a bunch of his games that can be downloaded.
Okay.
So that game kind of got pretty popular and he decided to develop it into like a full game.
Interesting.
So, and at the time it was called Sacrifices Must Be Made after the theme of the Ludum Dare event.
Okay. Do you know if this is a common thing that he would do with games that he was like just starting out with to see if it would gain popularity before committing to fully developing it?
Yeah, that's
kind of like just a little tester.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I feel like having kind of that demo is a good way to do it. And I'm not sure if he's done it with other games or not, but I mean, it sounds like a smart way to do it.
Yeah. And like, if you already have a couple other games out, you probably have a fan base. So why not kind of use them to your advantage, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a win-win. They get to play a new game and give you feedback, which gamers love to do.
Yeah.
And you get to take their feedback for free.
So yeah, after this game got positive feedback on the itch.io, Mullins decided to expand it to a full game. In an interview with The Escapist, Daniel Mullins states that the card game overall was inspired primarily by Magic the Gathering, with elements borrowed from Yu-Gi-Oh!, Hearthstone, and Slay the Spire.
Nice.
I thought this was kind of interesting, too. The meta elements present throughout the game were inspired by Doki Doki Literature Club and Frog Fractions.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
I know you probably recognize some of those games because
Oh, yeah. We
obviously talked about them.
Oh, yeah. Slay the Spire, I definitely got that reference. There's, like, the way you move through the maps are similar. Like, there's a lot of similarities, but it's definitely not, like, a ripoff or anything by that, you know, by far. And then like, yeah, I can see the Doki Doki Literature Club stuff. And then was like Blair Witch an influence at all? You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff in there too.
Yeah, he definitely wanted to do the found footage style of horror, but I couldn't find him directly referencing anything from Blair Witch. But I mean, it seems like it to me, but I could be wrong.
I mean, I feel like if you are A horror fan, or B, like a millennial, and you grew up in the 90s, early 2000s when Blair Witch came out, that's just in your brain forever.
Yeah.
Like, you don't forget that movie. And so, like, you could be inspired by it, but, like, not even realize you're being inspired by it necessarily, you know?
Yeah, pretty much any found footage thing, to me, I automatically think Blair Witch.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just the found footage part. It was the whole, like, story, too. But I guess we'll get into that later.
And a funny thing about that, like, when you're looking at that footage, that's all pretty much just the actor he hired, Kevin Saxby, and Daniel Mullins with the camera.
Oh, that's great.
So it's pretty much just the two of them filming it mostly together.
Yeah. And that one lady that comes in.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out who played her.
She's uncredited.
Uncredited. Okay, so on to Leshy. Mullins had considered that the dealer was a type of forest demon, and while searching online, came across the mythos of Leshy, which he believed fit well with the horror theme of the game. So Leshy comes from the Slavic mythology, where he is a deity of the forest and hunting.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, so Leshy is an actual, like, Slavic deity.
Neat.
If you didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to invent the wheel here. There's like plenty of cool, creepy, mythical creatures and beings like already out there in mythology. So why not?
Yeah, and then from there, the other three scribes fell out as he compared them to Pokemon gym leaders, each with a different theme. Since Leshy was associated with beasts, the other three were associated with robots, P03, wizards, Magnificus, and the undead Grimora. So, cool. Yeah. So Mullins recognized that the game spends most of the time around Leshy and P03 stories, but felt like it would have made the game too long to include additional acts to explore Grimora's or Magnificus's background.
Mm-hmm.
So do you kind of agree with that? Do you think it would have dragged out the game too much?
I don't. And, you know, I think this game could benefit from some DLC, too. I mean, it's probably not going to happen. But, you know, why not make that something you could add later?
I mean, he actually did add some DLC to it, some free DLC, which was
Casey. Oh, really?
Yeah, Casey's Mod wasn't originally included with the game, and he went back and added that later.
I didn't know that. But I don't think this game was that long, even for a roguelike game. I mean, I put so many more hours into other ones. I feel like this could have been longer and I wouldn't have been complaining.
Yeah, I agree. But also at the same time, the puzzle elements kind of, you know, since there's one solution for those, once you figure that out, I don't know if there's a way to roguelike puzzles.
I mean, I don't see why you couldn't keep the same puzzles, change the answer, and hide it in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, you could still use the safe, you could still use some of the elements, but hide the code somewhere else, make it findable in a different way. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I think there's a way you could do it.
So, like I said, Daniel Mullins released a free update in December 2021 that included a beta version of a mini expansion to the game called Casey's Mod. In this mode, the roguelike deck building game from Act 1 can be played endlessly, with the player able to unlock new cards and starting abilities to take on more difficult challenges. The mini expansion was fully released on March 17, 2022.
Okay.
So by now, it's definitely 100% out.
Yeah. Yeah, Casey's Mod is okay. I feel like, I don't know, it's just like if you really love playing the card game aspect of it, then I get why you'd want to keep playing that, but that's pretty much all it is almost.
Yeah.
Like, and then making that harder and harder and harder.
Yeah, if it eventually got too easy, like I felt like it got kind of too easy in the story a little bit. Mm-hmm. So adding those additional ways to make it more challenging was pretty appreciated.
Yeah.
So Inscription released on October 19th, 2021, generally receiving positive reviews and winning several awards, including Best Game of 2021 from Polygon, Game of the Year from the Game Developers Choice Awards, and Excellence in Narrative, Design, and Audio from the Independent Game Festival Awards.
Wow.
So it's an award-winning game.
I mean, those are some really good awards, too. Yeah. Game of the Year is pretty hard to get, so.
Yeah. So about 4 months after release, it sold over 1 million copies.
Wow.
Which is nice.
Just for like an indie one person game, like one person made game, that's nuts. Could you imagine? Like, that'd be so cool.
It's not just one person who made the game. He also, like, he had like 3D artists help him with some of the stuff, mm-hmm. and an audio engineer doing the music and stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So all right. There are more people involved than just him, but he's kind of like the main mm-hmm. person. You know, it was initially his Ludum Dare project.
Yeah.
And then he kind of fleshed it out.
Mm-hmm.
And he had people to help him flesh it out.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just him, but yeah. He had a small team.
And obviously, Luke Carter was there, the Lucky Carter.
And that lady. Don't forget that uncredited lady.
The lady who murders.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Sorry. That's a spoiler.
Uh-oh. Hey, lady, if you're listening, we are not forgetting about you, okay? We just don't know your name.
All right. Are you ready for some fun facts?
Oh, I'm always ready for fun facts.
All right. I got just three fun facts, but...
Only three?
So they're kind of longer, so...
Can I pick the order that they go in?
Like, no.
You know, like the okay.
You cannot pick the order.
Okay, fine.
Wait, what were you going to ask?
You know, like the cards, they lay out the three cards, you have the choices. It's like, ooh, I could like pick which fun fact you say first.
Okay, one, two, or three?
Yeah. Number two.
My longest fun fact.
Ooh.
So Casey Hobbs, the game's fictional developer, appears in all three acts of the game and is mentioned in the video entries from the Lucky Carter.
So, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so did you catch the references to her in all three acts?
I think so.
Okay, well, I will remind you anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah, let's go through them.
So, according to the Lucky Carter videos, she died in a fire at the company, but you find her death card in Leshy's deck in Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
In Act 2, she appears as a skeleton as one of Grimora's servants. You have to fill out her epitaph, which reads, Casey Hobbs, 1970 to the winter of 1992, hit by a falling piece of ice. The defibrillator failed.
Yes.
So you kind of get that.
I remember that.
So you kind of already have three conflicting ways that she died.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the fire, you have the her as a death card, and then you also have her as a skeleton who was killed by falling ice.
Uh-huh.
She's mentioned in Act 3, but only as names for the bounty hunters. It can, like, the bounty hunters can have the name either Casey or Hobbs or other names, mm-hmm. or sometimes Casey Hobbs.
Who is Casey Hobbs?
Yeah. To me, it's left very unclear whether she was trapped in the game somehow or died accidentally or was killed.
Mm-hmm.
If you play through Casey's mod, you get several of her journal entries, with the last one stating that she was going to go bury the game in the woods.
Yeah.
Which is likely where the Lucky Carter finds the game. So you wonder, like, okay, if she ended up as a death card, she wouldn't have been able to bury the game, would she? Probably not, right?
Unless she buried it and then she died. Like, she got caught. But then she didn't tell them where it was. So they murdered her. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. That's a possibility. Possibly? I don't know, man.
So they left her as a loose end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my fun fact, is you don't know what actually happens to her.
You get to make up your own theories.
Yeah. Maybe she's out there living her life somewhere, a foreign country or something.
Maybe she's the creator of the game, the real creator.
Oh, and Daniel Mullins is just a front?
What if he murdered her? stole her game.
You know, that is an avenue they need to search down. Did Daniel Mullins kill Casey Hobbs?
Oh my God, what if it turned into like a true crime thing and we like predicted it?
You watch too much true crime stuff, I think. All right, so one or three?
One.
Okay, so I think you might already know this one, but it's still a fun fact. But in Act 1 and 3, you encounter some talking cards. In Act 1, the cards are the other scribes who have been trapped in the cards by Leshy, with P03 being the stoat, Grimora being the stink bug, and Magnificus being the stunted wolf. The appearance of those three cards will gradually change over time to more resemble how the scribes actually look. So if you notice that the stoat's head kind of got gradually more square.
Huh.
As you played.
I don't think I noticed that. I need to go back and play it now.
And then in Act 3, Fishbots and the Lonely Wizbot are minions of Leshy and Magnificus turned into cards by PR03. Not quite as intricate as the story with the scribes. But
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay, and so now we have
fact number three.
Yeah, the last fun fact. And like I said, these are kind of longer ones. So.
Okay.
So you can actually buy packs of inscription cards on Devolver's website.
What?
When I checked it out, they were sold out, though, so I'm not sure if it was more of like a limited release or if they'd ever be re-released. And unfortunately, the cards are only for collecting and not part of a card version of the game, since all packs contain the same 12 cards.
Oh.
So.
Boo.
Yeah.
They need to come out with a tabletop version.
Yeah, I want to buy some. Game. I definitely want to buy some inscription cards.
I have a fun fact.
Yeah, shoot.
Bonus fun fact. Devolver also does How to Have a Boyfriend, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do a bunch of games.
I remember, yeah, they do. But I was like, that logo looks familiar.
Yeah, they're the production company that I think end up releasing a lot of games that indie developers make.
Yeah, they're cool. I appreciate them.
Yeah. All right, so those are my fun facts. You want to talk a little bit about the story?
Sure. So pretty much you start out, you don't really know anything because, you know, you're just in this cabin.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of learn as you go that
you're Luke,
right?
Yeah, you're Luke Carter.
But you don't know who Luke is until later.
Yeah, you kind of find out who Luke Carter is through the found footage, but it becomes more apparent as you're playing the game that you're playing as Luke Carter.
Oh, yeah. And he's kind of like learning how this game got made, but like on accident. He's not supposed to be finding these clues and things.
Yeah, I feel like it really kind of comes home that you're Luke Carter when you play Act 3 mm-hmm. and you're kind of in the computer world.
Yeah.
And you keep coming across his files.
Yeah.
And
you literally have dialogue at the end. Like, occasionally you'll say, crap, or like something like that.
Oh, he'll do that throughout the game. He'll do that even starting in Act 1. But you're not really quite sure that who it is that's doing it. Oh, okay,
yeah. But at the end, it's like, you know, it's definitely you that's supposed to be talking.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the basic premise is through the found footage that he is a YouTube personality who opens packs of cards and he finds mm-hmm. the coordinates to this buried game in one of the card packs. He finds the game.
Conveniently, it's close enough that he can physically go there.
Yeah. For some reason, he tries to do a bunch of research into it. Like, he calls the company and finds out about Casey, the developer.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of reveal this Blair Witch style, and it's like Luke filming himself, kind of documenting his little adventure, his little investigative adventure.
Yeah, which does not end well for Luke, unfortunately. It doesn't.
R.I.P. Luke.
So yeah, the end of the game, Grimora decides to delete the game. All the scribes kind of like say their goodbyes. It's actually kind of cool because in that final act, you get to see the other two scribes' version of the card game,
mm-hmm.
but like not like a fully developed version.
Yeah.
So you see like Grimora's is kind of like a chessboard. And
then you get these cool like tombstone cards.
Yeah. And then Magnificus is more like, it almost looks like a Yu-Gi-Oh! Like kind of style summoning board where you can summon wizards to it.
Mm-hmm.
They actually both look super cool. I kind of wish he had developed those out.
Yeah, they are really cool. Very different.
Yeah.
That's something I like too. Like the art changes throughout the game. The art styles.
But yeah, so the game gets deleted. Luke Carter smashes the disc with a hammer. And then a person from the company mysteriously shows up
mm-hmm.
and shoots him.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum.
And he dies. Well, you assume you don't know for sure he's dead.
That's true. Probably.
He's definitely dead. There's 100% dead.
Yeah.
There's no way he survived that. That's pretty much the game.
Yeah. So it's cool. You have all these different layers of stories because you have like the in-game story with all the scribes and then you have Luke's story and it's kind of meta and it's great.
Yeah. And you're kind of slowly given more and more detail as you complete the acts.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to go into pros and cons?
Yeah.
So for me personally, like I was blown away by this game, and part of that is that initial surprise of, oh, the game's not really over after beating Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I was playing through Act 1, I'm like, okay, this is the whole game. It's going to be this puzzle room and this roguelike.
Yeah.
That was my initial thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, when you start...
Me too.
When you start Act 2, you basically get an entirely different version of Inscription, where it's more of a card-collecting RPG as opposed to roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to Act 3, you get another different version of Inscription again, which almost kind of plays out like an adventure game. And all three acts, you also have these kind of like puzzle elements.
Mm-hmm.
The Act 1 and Act 3 are more like escape rooms, whereas Act 2, I feel like the puzzles are just kind of scattered throughout.
Yeah, I agree. And like with each act, I'll piggyback on what I said earlier. Each act is in a different art style. So it's like the first one is more like 3D illustrative and almost computer game like because you can't move super fluidly like and walk around like anywhere you want. It's kind of pre-planned steps that you can sort of take, you know. And then the second act you have more 8-bit kind of like Undertale style art.
More pixel art. Mm-hmm. It kind of looks like a top-down Pokemon game.
Yeah.
And I think it is actually based on the Pokemon card game, which mm-hmm. I never played that, but it definitely kind of looks like Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. And then Act 3, what kind of art style would you say that is?
I would say it's like a glitch art style / kind of futuristic.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, so you have like all these different art styles, which is really cool. And keeps the game fresh and like keeps you interested. Like, oh, what are they going to do next? Like, what are my eyes going to see next? Yeah. You know? And then they also have these clips of the videos that we were telling you about. So it's just a lot of different styles of art.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's a lot of styles of art and a lot of different genres of games. So mm-hmm. yeah, it kind of ends up being like a game and a game and a game.
Yeah.
It's like he had to really develop three different versions of the game in order to make a complete version of the game.
I like that if you ask someone what this genre of this game is and they played it, they probably wouldn't be able to say, oh, this is just roguelike. They were like, oh, this is like five different genres of a game in yeah. one. So it's like, oh, it's a roguelike puzzle adventure escape room. Yeah, I don't know.
RPG.
Yeah. It's a lot of things that all combined together in a really creative way.
Yeah. And so like one of my other pros is just the fact that it's really impressive that he took the time to build all those different styles out and all those different games out and put them into one cohesive package.
Mm-hmm.
And then like they're all fun and they're pretty well balanced. And then at the finale, you get even more like art styles and card games that weren't quite as developed, but it's still cool to see them in the finale too, uh-huh. which is like so impressive to me.
Yeah, agree. I like the complex and layered gameplay of this game, but it's also fun and addictive. So it's like you want to keep playing. You want to keep learning about the story, but you also want to play the card game too because it's just really fun.
Yeah, I like how once you kind of feel like you've learned it, you kind of have to learn a new version of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's like you're constantly having to relearn the game and the rule sets and all that stuff.
Yeah, you don't get bored. You don't have time to really get bored in this game because it kind of changes things up just when you think you got it figured out.
Yeah. One thing I really liked were the talking cards in Act 1 and Act 3.
Me too. They were funny.
Yeah, the different personalities of the cards really came through. Did you have a favorite talking card? Stoat.
I like the Stoat. Oh, he's just very sarcastic and always criticizing your moves.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, is this supposed to be a hint? Like, is he's really telling me that was a bad move, you know? And then I figured, no, that's his personality. Like,
my favorite was the lonely Wizbot.
If
you played another card while he was on the board, he would move from his spot to cling to the new card and be like, a new friend.
Yeah, that guy was pretty funny too. I really liked the deck building aspect of this game. Because there's just so many different, like, strategies you can have. The cards have different characters on them. They have different species of, like, animals. Or what would you call that? The categories of, like, the animals.
Yeah, they kind of have, like, the predatory types and the...
Like, insects were a type.
Yeah, birds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, birds, insects.
And like reptiles.
And then they kind of separated like the predators from like the herbivores a little bit.
There's just a lot of different ways you can build your deck up for strategic reasons. Like you could just go with like mostly air animals because, you know, for reasons. And then like the cards also have different sigils on them, which all do different things. So that makes the decks really varied because not all cards will be the same exact. Even if it's the same animal, it might have different sigil on it or something like that to like make it play differently.
Or you could end up transferring a different sigil mm-hmm. or sigil to it.
Yeah, I like the aspect of the game where you're not necessarily playing the card game because you have these stops in between your matches with it's kind of like if you think of a board game and you have a piece and you're moving from space to space. In this game, not all the spaces are going to be card battles.
Yeah.
So you have other little stops in between that help you kind of like build your deck up.
Yeah. It's like you'll have a battle and then you'll have two stops mm-hmm. that you can kind of like maybe navigate a little bit sometimes. Like you can choose a little bit of a path and then you'll have another battle and then you'll get to continue on the path. But yeah, these are the deck building parts where you can mm-hmm. add cards or improve cards or upgrade cards.
And some of the options you have are you can land on the option to pick between three random cards. You can land on the option to pick between three costs of a card, like one blood, two blood, three blood drops. And then you flip the card over, you pick that way. And yeah. then there's what we were talking about earlier, where you might pick between like the species of the card, you mm-hmm. know, like you'll have a deer, a wolf, and a snake, and you're like, you can pick that way. There's also ways to refill your bag, which carries items on the table for you to kind of use when you're in a pickle.
Yeah.
If you're about to lose, you know, you might could like pull out some of these items. And then what are some of the other stops? You've got the mushroom guy, who will like take two of your cards and kind of like,
yeah, if you have two duplicates, you can mm-hmm. basically join their stats together and make a card that's twice as good.
Exactly. So if you have like two cards that are two attack and two health, he might put them together and it'll be four attack and four health for one card instead of having that two separate.
Yeah. And then you have the
what else the can you land on?
Sacrificial shrine. Mm-hmm. Where you can sacrifice a card for sigils and move it to another card, which makes that card much mm-hmm. more powerful. And then you also have the campfires where you can risk improving a card's attack or defense.
Yeah. So it's a lot of different little fun ways to like choose cards and build your deck in different ways. And I think it helps just like change the game up a little so you're not just constantly like doing card battles.
Yeah.
The whole time.
You're trying to choose the path that will help you build up your cards the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, you kind of want more cards. But as you get later and later, you want more stuff that will either allow you to get rid of cards or like move sigils and get rid of cards that way mm-hmm. or like upgrade cards so they're not as useless.
And I know this all sounds really complicated right now, but if you played the game, you kind of know that it is overwhelming at first, but like it's really easy to catch on to all the different rules and
it doesn't throw everything
things like that.
It doesn't just throw everything at you all at once. It kind of mm-hmm. eases you into it.
Yeah, it does a really good job of teaching you as you go, which I always appreciate when games do that really well.
Yeah.
Because when they don't, it's really bad.
Yeah. And one of the things I liked also was the puzzle elements.
Yeah, I have that too.
I think I've kind of already mentioned that they're in the same vein as an escape room. You have to look for clues around the room and sometimes within like the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I thought was really cool is that some of the clues you can only get by actually playing the game.
Yeah.
Like when you have the caged wolf and you have to like put him in front of cards
mm-hmm.
to have him damaged to essentially destroy the cage.
Yeah, yeah.
Or when you have to like get the dagger or whatever. Because you need the, well, it took me a while to realize this because I kept trying to save the dagger.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, yeah, you have to use the dagger so he can give you a replacement eye. I thought like once you use the dagger, your eye was just going to be gone for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I did too. So I'm like, oh, great.
I don't want to use that dagger.
I'm glad that he does give you another eye. But then it's like you have to pick the right eye. And it's like, yeah, it was very much like an escape room where it's like three steps or four steps to solve a puzzle, you know? And we had just did a escape room with our friends.
I know, right?
Where we were in a cabin. And so I was like, did they just copy this escape room? Or did this escape room copy this game? Like, which way was it? But I thought that was kind of like a fun coincidence. Like, oh, cool. I got a little bit of practice at this without even really meaning to.
Yeah, that is cool.
I also think that this game is good at, like, it has a lot of strategy, but even if you're not a super strategic person, like a very strategic person, there's also enough luck and other things in here where you can get by.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So especially, it's not like, for me, because I'm not a, I don't know, I say I'm not strategic, but I feel like certain times I can be. But that's probably not one of my strongest skills in video gameplay. But I was still able to get pretty good at this game, even though like I would make a mistake here and there. It wasn't so harsh where like if you made one mistake, you would die. You know, like you had a little bit of room to not be perfect, I guess.
Yeah, and once you start like getting your death cards into the deck, you can really make just some ridiculously good cards
mm-hmm.
that can kind of make the game a lot easier.
Yeah, like some cards you could get and maybe you could win the whole game just by playing that one card. And those cards didn't come by all the time, so yeah, it wasn't like true. Every gameplay you were like getting really, really strong cards. But occasionally you would be able to like strategically build one up, you know? So it wasn't like you were always getting these, you know? So you really cherished the cards.
Yeah, when you got them
or when you like leveled them up.
Yeah, I had this one card called Turtle Boy.
Nice.
He did 6 damage, and he did it like the tri-strike or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in three different directions. So he did so much damage. It was ridiculous.
It was great.
It was like once I got him on the board in any capacity, it would pretty much be the game was over.
Yeah.
If he hit one spot, you know, that moves it the scale 6,
mm-hmm.
which is ridiculous.
Yeah, and how you win these card matches is there's a scale, and you're basically trying to get ahead by 5 points.
You have to win by 5.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to tip. It starts in the middle, and then each person can tip the scale depending on how much damage they do.
Yeah, so it'll go like back and forth until one person wins.
Another thing I enjoyed was the horror elements of the game, like Leshy taking your picture and trapping you forever in a card.
And his creepy hands coming at you, like, time to die. And then his hands just come like they're going to choke you to death.
Yeah, it's not like the Evil Within level scary, but
no,
it is creepy, you know, the themes of it. I like the Blair Witch found footage with the Lucky Carter. All that stuff. I thought that was fun. A little bit cheesy, but I still thought it was like really fun.
Yeah, more like a B-horror movie vibes. Yeah. Not like it's not meant to be super scary.
Yeah.
You know, just meant to be a little creepy and a little funny. Also.
Yeah.
A little campy. The music for this game is really good. Like, it sets the mood. Like, when you're playing certain bosses, like, that music just comes on and you're like, ooh. Time to get serious.
Yeah, I know, right?
Whatever. I just enjoyed it. And the music always lined up with like the art style. And it was really good.
I loved Leshy's boss music. I thought that was, man, so good when you got to him and that music kicked in.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, it's either no music because you're just in the cabin where there's no music,
mm-hmm.
or it's kind of more ambience or like, you know, just really subtle.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you have some bosses where the music kicks in. It hits really good when it does kick in.
Yeah. It's just done really well.
Any other pros?
Yeah. One other thing is, well, I guess we kind of already talked about it a little bit, but all the characters in the game are super interesting and creative. And they draw from a lot of different inspirations. And yeah, I just thought everything was really well done.
Yeah, I agree.
Well written and
well conceived.
Yeah, I really like this game. You can't tell.
Pretty awesome that he conceived of this in a 48-hour film or 48-hour game festival.
Yeah.
Sorry, not film festival. My brain is stuck in that.
One thing I really like about doing this podcast is that I get to try games that I probably would never try normally. And this is one that I probably, if you just told me about it, I would be like, I don't think I would like that.
Yeah.
But then playing it, I really enjoyed it and was like really getting into it. So, you know, I just get surprised and I find new stuff and it's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
So
on that really positive note, do you want to talk about the cons?
Yeah, we could. I don't have that many actually. So
yeah, I don't either.
One of my main cons is, and it's more of just like a tiny complaint really, Casey's Mod, which is the DLC I guess that you got after the game already came out, I think it gets a little repetitive and they take the puzzles away mostly from what I could find. So when you play Casey's Mode, you're back at Act 1's cabin essentially, so you still have a lot of those puzzles there, but from what I found online is like you can't solve them. So I don't really know why they're there. And I wish they would have kept the puzzle aspect to Casey's Mod more than just like
the card game. And that's what Casey's Mod is really, it's just the roguelike part of Act 1, which I like it. To me, like, I think it adds like a ton of replayability to the game,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like just having to go back to the story to play that part. You can actually play it kind of in a more challenging endless mode.
Yeah.
If you really like it.
Yeah.
And I played that actually quite a bit.
I know. But I just don't see why they couldn't have kept the puzzle so you could unlock cards and stuff. Like,
yeah,
keep that. Because well, to me, that's one of the more fun parts of the game that I really enjoyed. Why have them there if you can't solve them?
Yeah.
Is all I'm saying.
I gotcha. So one of my cons is Act 2 and 3 don't quite measure up to Act 1 in terms of like how much fun they are to play.
Yeah, I agree. Act 1 is definitely like my favorite to play.
Yeah, in Act 2, I just ended up with like too many cards to really get a good feel for how to use them all. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the idea of the RPG like deck builder.
Yeah.
But I just ended up with like all these, you know, there are four different styles of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, you can pick one of the four starter decks.
Yeah.
But then you start getting cards from all the different decks. And it's just like, it's a lot to like try to figure out, okay, you have these three other ways other than the way you learned to play with Leshy, but then you have elements of those three different ways in that can get integrated into your deck, and you don't really quite know what you're doing at that point.
Yeah,
it ends up being like, yeah, you end up with too many cards that you really can't use or don't know how to use.
Mm-hmm.
And they both ended up like pretty linear compared to like the roguelike, but I mean, to me, like, I love roguelikes, and that's like one of my favorite styles of games. So mm-hmm. if you compare anything to that, it's not going to be as good.
Yeah. Another thing I thought probably could have been more creative was the Blair Witch type story thing they had going on.
Yeah.
Pretty predictable, like, lore for a game. Like,
it's a bit,
I don't know, it wasn't that creative.
It is a bit cheesy, and I kind of had that too. But I still enjoyed it. I still kind of almost as a throwback.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with that. So for me, I really wanted to see the games the other two scribes, Grimora Magnificus, made.
Mm-hmm.
Or would have made.
Yeah.
I know, like Mullen said, that adding them would have added too much blank to the game, but if it was more like a choose your own adventure where you could choose like which path you went for Act 3 or mm-hmm. whatever, I think it could have worked, but maybe it was just too much development time.
Yeah. They could also added they have Casey's mod, when I have Gamora's mod or Ooh. Something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, I don't think this game needs to be done. There still needs to be more DLC.
All right, Daniel Mullins, get back to work.
I mean, you can charge us for it, but like, I think it needs to be continued. That's all. I don't have any more cons, do you?
Nah, that's it.
Do you want to go into some strategy?
Yeah,
like, there's
sure.
a lot. That we could probably go into, but let's not spend like an hour on this.
Yeah, I agree. And then most of my strategy stuff is really associated with either Act 1 or Casey's mod. Mm-hmm. So, because that was like the most strategic seeming bit to me.
Yeah. So my first bit of strategy is to slow down a little bit and make decisions with a purpose. Try to think like a move or two ahead if you can. Kind of like chess.
Yeah, it's good advice. And I feel like for me, like playing Act 1, there are some cards that I will pick up with just the intent of sacrificing it and transferring the sigil to a better card.
Yeah, I have that as a piece of strategy too.
Yeah, I think of like the Adder is a great example of that mm-hmm. type of card. It has a high cost, only has one health and one damage, but the sigil will allow it to kill most cards with one hit. So moving its sigil to a card that's low cost and has more health ends up making a much better card overall. Basically, there are some cards that are just, they're statted worse because of the sigil. And you mm-hmm. want, if you just move that sigil to a better statted card, it makes it so much better.
Yeah, and that's just like, the game wants you to think like that.
Yeah.
They set it up. Pick your cards wisely, obviously. And like you said, don't always pick your card with the intention of keeping that card. Sometimes you need to pick that card because you're going to combine it with another card, or you want to take that sigil and put it on something else, or you're going to like possibly risk it in the campfire. You're like, okay, this is low, but I'm going to put it in the campfire and just see how built up I can get it, you know?
Yeah, I'll definitely like take a card that I don't care about sometimes and just put it and just try to leave it there as long as I can.
Mm-hmm. And that way it's like, okay, well, if I lose it, it's no big deal because like this card kind of sucks anyway, so why not just gamble with
exactly.
it?
Yeah, don't risk a card that you already have transferred a bunch of sigils to or something.
Definitely.
You can get away with one for whatever card, but like if you keep it longer than that, yeah, you risk losing it.
Yeah.
And speaking of losing cards, I would say try to keep your deck from getting too large, because filling it with ordinary cards dilutes the probability of drawing mm-hmm. one of your powerful cards.
But also having all powerful cards cannot be good too, because you won't have enough blood to play them.
Well, you're talking high cost cards. I'm thinking
that's
powerful.
That's what I mean.
I'm talking powerful cards as in cards that just do a lot of damage or low mm-hmm. cost or easy to get onto the board or whatever.
Yeah.
I should probably use the term valuable cards.
Yeah. A lot of the more powerful cards do cost more. But not always, if you've been doing your job correctly.
Yeah, you really don't want to end up with the deck full of just high-cost cards. Mm. Because then, if you get like three or four of them all together, you're pretty much
screwed. Yeah, it's good to have a variety of low-cost, high-cost, bone costs.
Bone costs, yeah.
Yeah, there's some that you can play where you don't have to have blood. You can just use these little like tokens that you gain.
Just use the corpses of the other monsters you play.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the other creatures you play, not monsters. So.
One of my other pieces of strategy is to try to start learning what all the sigils and the symbols mean. There's a lot of them, but like the more you can kind of start memorizing, then the less you have to look stuff up. And then it'll just come more natural to you. And that just kind of comes as you play the game. But just know going into it, that's something you might want to prepare your brain for.
You will have to
memorize a lot of things.
You will have to look some stuff up. Yeah. But luckily, a lot of the sigils kind of look like they would, you know, they indicate like, you know.
That's true. What they're going to do.
Yeah, like what they're going to do.
But if you're unsure, just look it up. Because like I've made the mistake of like thinking, oh yeah, that does that, and then I play the card and I'm like, oh crap, I mixed that up with another one and it didn't do what I thought it was gonna do, so don't do what I did.
Yeah, so one of my pieces of advice is the wood carver is really hit or miss. So once you get a decent combination of totems, it's better to avoid him since most totems likely won't be useful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty tough to get like a great combination. So once you get one, it's like, yeah, don't keep pushing your luck, because you're likely just to get more junk. And you end up with a bunch of totems that you can't use, because you can only use one combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless you're going to be changing it up. But I never did. Once I found a good combo, I just left it that way. Unless I got to choose something better. And I'm like, ooh, upgrade.
Yeah.
I think one of the best ones that I ever made was like the squirrel head, and then the sigil that gives you that card when you play that card.
Oh, yeah.
Because you always need squirrels in this game. They don't cost anything to play, but they count for one blood. So you kind of like have to use, they're kind of like the pawns in this game. And so I was just like, I never would run out of squirrel cards.
Yeah.
And I would just be able to play whatever cards I wanted, no matter how costly they were. It was great.
It was the
best combo.
Then you can just start stacking your deck with like high cost cards.
Yeah.
That do a ton of damage.
Man, that round was so easy. I was like just winning. It was great.
There are other similar cards like that you could get on, or similar totems like that you can get on the squirrel totem. I had one playthrough that had like the unkillable thing on the squirrel totem.
Yeah, I like
so
that too.
Every time I sacrificed it would come back to my hand.
Yeah.
Or the three blood thing on the squirrel, where every time you sacrificed one squirrel it was like sacrificing three of them.
Oh yeah,
that's another good one.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
My final one is to try to make sure you have duplicate cards, just in case you get lucky and come across the mycologist. Yeah, the mushroom guy.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, combining the cards, even if they're pretty ordinary cards, will make a super powerful card, because it will cost the same, but all the stats will be basically double.
Yeah. And I do like in Casey's mod how they bring back the guy, the goo guy.
Yeah.
He's just a jar of goo,
Goober,
but he's
Goober.
Got a personality.
His name is Goober.
Oh yeah, it's like instead of the mushroom thing, or maybe they still have the mushroom thing, but in addition to that, they have a spot where you can land on him and you give him a card and he tries to paint it.
Yeah, he'll do his best.
But he's only like 90% accurate.
I would say lower than 90%. Yeah, I mean, I think...
But it's still fun. Like, it's like, what's he going to do? Is he going to make it slightly more powerful or is it slightly worse? Less powerful?
Yeah, he'll mess something up more. Or I think it's about a 50-50 chance he'll mess something up on the card. Yeah.
But I've had it where he's done it and I got a better card. But
yeah.
The trick is to just put your most powerful card up, like, that has the most damage or whatever. That way, if he does go down or up one,
it won't be that.
It won't be zero.
Yeah, and sometimes you also mess the any sigils up that are on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's always fun, too.
I don't know. It was always fun to see what he was going to do. He was one of my favorite side characters, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he would just pop up in each act. He was kind of like there in, I don't know, comic relief.
Yeah.
And just like a kind of cute character too, so
just a pile of goo in a jar.
Yeah. I like Goober.
Completely worthless. So moving on, do you have anything for the future?
I really did not see much for the future. Do you have anything?
I have one thing. So Inscription is Daniel Mullen's latest full game, but if you check out his itch.io page, he has smaller, less fully developed games he's made since Inscription.
Mm-hmm.
He's done Ludum Dare several times since the release of Inscription, and he's even won it a few times.
Wow, cool.
So if you want a sneak peek at what he might be working on next, that would be a good place to start, would be his itch.io page.
Where did you say Ludum Dare was?
It's not a specific location, I think. Oh. I think it's a forum.
They just do it all over, like the 48th Film Festival. They just do it in multiple locations. Because that would be cool to go to. I want to, like, go to one.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a physical location or not for it, but it is kind of cool. Probably going to have some sleepless nights or some restless nights just trying to go into that creative mode.
I mean, it's just 48 hours.
And you want a finished product at the end of it, so, yeah. I think there's also a longer one that's 3 days, too, but or another version of it that's 3 days.
Wow, 3 whole days.
Yeah, I know, right? But, yeah, so that's all I got. So I think we all want to know, Nikki, did you manage to start a new game from the start menu?
Yes, I think I did. That was a trick challenge, I think.
Yeah, so new game isn't available on the main menu at the start of the game.
You can only continue.
You can only continue. And so you start off in Act 1 in the cabin. Basically, you're having to continue every time. And new game is blanked out. Once you beat Act 1, the room that's kind of flashing, you find out that that's actually the new game icon.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you beat Act 1, you get the new game icon. And then you go back to the main screen and you start a new game, and that's actually Act 2.
Yeah, you kind of tricked me there. I was like, what is going on?
So did you beat past Act 2?
Yeah, I beat the whole game, I think. I've been playing Casey's mod, but I'm not as into it as you.
Yeah.
Like, our friend John's been playing this game a lot also. I think that's how we heard about it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, John told us about it.
Because we'd always see him playing it on Switch. We're like, what is that? That's a good way to find new games, too. Just look and see what your friends are playing on there.
Your friends who have good taste in game.
Yeah.
Games.
Yeah. But I know this is, like, y'all's favorite kind of game. So, like, I figured, you know, you would keep playing it until you got to, like, the hardest thing and then probably beat that and then... Are you still going to keep playing in it more after that?
I'll probably find something else at that point.
Move on to something?
Yeah. Okay. But I really have enjoyed this game a lot.
Yeah, me too. I liked it.
So speaking of new games, I'm ready to hear what the new game is.
Oh, yeah. So I've been really good. I haven't even told you what console. I haven't told you anything about what this game's going to be. So do you want to take some random guesses?
I think you may have given me a hint on the console, but I'm not 100%. So I'm going to guess it's a Wii game.
Oh, man, I tried to cover up after I like.
You didn't do a very good job covering it up. But I have no idea what which Wii game.
Ah, yes, because we just got a Wii not that long ago from a yard sale. We got
a brand new old Wii.
Yeah. So I haven't really picked any bad games yet. You've picked a couple.
I love bad games.
Home Alone 2.
Yeah.
Superman.
64.
You picked some really bad ones. Yeah. So it's my turn.
Nice.
For Payback.
All right.
And you know, I was like, what game could I pick that Eric would just love to play so much over and over?
Nintendogs. No, wait, that's DS, I think. Maybe there's
and
a Wii
also
version.
I'm a lover of reality TV, so any guesses now? I've given you a couple hints.
I think I remember you might have picked it up at Steel Collectibles.
Yeah.
But I totally forget what it was.
It's called Project Runway. The game for the Wii.
And you're sure it's bad, right? I mean, Project Runway is outstanding, right?
Look, I love the show, okay? But I've not heard great things about this game online. So your challenge is to beat a season, which is basically beat the game on hard mode.
Beat a season on hard mode.
Yeah, beat a season on hard mode.
I mean, it should be a piece
of
cake, right?
You're going to have to learn how to be into fashion all of a sudden, Eric.
I'm sure my fashion taste will really push me forward on this game. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy who wears jeans and a t-shirt every single day is gonna, maybe it'll help your fashion. Maybe it'll inspire you to be more risky with your personal fashion, Eric. Who
knows? Nothing inspires better fashion than a bad video game.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's the challenge and that's the game. I'm pretty excited.
I don't know, but we'll find out.
Should be fun regardless.
Yeah, I think so. All right.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. As always, if you like this episode, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and check out our website, pressanybutton.net. You can check out our episodes, our wraps. You can buy merch. We have t-shirts now and, you know, lots of other things. So if you played this game, let us know what you thought. Thanks. Bye.